Now, your twin soul is that closest part. In some ways you always think of your twin soul as almost being part of your heart. Many of you have had a face, either in dream or when you close your eyes, and you see that face, you see those eyes, and that is the picture, the energy of your twin, because that is how close they are to you. No, they are not your primary angel, but often they will introduce themselves as part of your circle of guides, guardians. Now, for many of you also, during this time of change upon the planet, many of you are discovering that your twin soul is in fact a star being, that they have incarnated and that they are hovering, literally, above Earth or on your, what you would think of as, your home planet. And this creates a yearning, but it also creates an awareness of where they are and how you are working together. It is a piece of information about your own mission and purpose, and of course their mission and purpose as well. Being with your twin soul is not only like holding your sacred self, it is also confronting every shadow, every part of yourself, so there is nowhere to hide. If there are issues, or debris to be cleared, then it will be front and center, it will be immediate. And if something should arise in the interim, it will not hide away in the darkness of a corner, because your twin soul is your mirror. When you have worked through what we would call human issues-personality, ego issues, emotional debris, then it will be the most magnificent bonding that you can ever have, in or out of human form. Because that is your other. But do not assume that you embrace each other and that it is infinite bliss. It is infinite bliss, but only when you have let go of all of the illusions of who you might be, when you have fully embraced the truth of yourself. That is why some of the delay, for those of you who have twin souls who are star beings, either on board a mothership or home planet, because you are still working on the full embrace of you. And that is necessary, that is part of the work that you are undertaking, the love work for your ascension, for your completion of this phase of your journey. And so you are preparing, it is the precursor to joining in that wholeness with your twin. So, you have decided that you are not encountering them beforehand, but you are doing your work so that when you do come, and understand, if they have work or issues too, they are undertaking it. So, when you do come together, it will be that sacred union, it will be that divine union. So, if you feel disheartened sometimes that you are not with your beloved one, understand, you will be. Now, most of you, the majority of you, your twin soul is with us on this side, in what you at right now think of as the unseen realm. But when you are looking for a partner, and we don't mean just a relationship, but truly your partner, what you are innately doing is you are seeking for the qualities of your twin, your divine complement. And what is happening is that your twin is also assisting you, doing a great deal of behind-the-scenes work in helping you meet that divine partner, or divinely orchestrated partner. I have been asked, how can a twin flame relation be explained within the context of those currently choosing same-sex relations? My answer is that it does not matter at all. I would suggest to you that most of you have been heterosexual, homosexual, lesbian, it does not matter. Love is love. And when you are in sacred union, or if you are with your twin in a same-sex relationship, if you have chosen to do that, it is because you are breaking some old paradigms of Earth that have been very rigid in terms of trying to define what love can look like, what it is permitted to look like. No, love takes all forms. And so for those who have chosen, and for those who have felt there was never a choice, other than to be in same-sex relationship, we support you, because love is love. And what you are doing is you are breaking the paradigms. That is part of your mission and purpose. And it is not to make an issue out of it. The whole point is that it is a non-issue. Far too much drama is given to this. So, understand, on other planets, in other realities, this is simply not an issue. Understand, a sacred union does not have to be with your twin soul, because many of you have entered into a sacred union. It is a union of full commitment. But where you see it with a twin soul, twin souls will always work together. And the mission and purpose of what they are doing on Earth at this time in conjunction merges. One may play a greater supporting role, but they are bonded at such a deep level. So you will not find, for example, one working on Wall Street and the other being artist in California. That will not happen. They will be united in their mission and purpose. they will be as one. Of course, each expressing uniquely and individually. But it places the relationship. The sacred union places the relationship beyond the questions. It is, we are together. It is that declaration of love that you think of as romantic love. I will love you completely forever no matter what. We are doing this together, this journey we are doing it together. Archangel Michael, channeled through Linda Dillon in Steve Bicko's An Hour with an Angel radio show, the 16th of April 2012. Moving on now to visualizing one's higher self, perhaps through trying to understand the nature and appearance of that overshadowing high being, we have been given a very good description by Shirley MacLaine in her book, Dancing in the Light, in which she describes a first meeting with her own higher self during a psychic exploration with her friend Chris Griscom. I breathed deeply into the center of myself as though I were getting my psychic balance. Then a picture swam into my mind, at first diffused, but then very clear. It was absolutely astonishing. I saw the form of a very tall, overpoweringly confident, almost androgynous human being. A graceful, fold of green-colored garment flowed over a figure 7 feet tall, with long arms resting calmly at its side. Even longer fingers extended from the arms. The energy of the form seemed more masculine than feminine to me. The skin of the being was ruddy and its hair was long to the shoulders and auburn-colored. The face had high cheekbones and a straight, chiseled nose. The eyes were deep, deep blue, and the expression was supremely kind, yet strong. It raised its arms in outstretched welcome. I got an oriental feeling from it, more oriental than western. And I had the intuitive feeling that it was extremely protective, full of patience, yet capable of great wrath. It was simple, but so powerful that it seemed to know all there was to know. I was flabbergasted at what I saw, and what I felt about it. "Who are you?" I asked, hardly daring to hear what it would say, nor what to make of this kind of dimensional experience. The being smiled at me and embraced me. "I am your higher unlimited self," it said. "Oh, my goodness," I heard myself say stupidly to it. "Are you really there?" It smiled again. "Yes," it said, "I have always been here. I've been here with you since the beginning of time. I am never away from you. I am you. I am your unlimited soul. I am the unlimited you that guides and teaches you through each incarnation." "Listen," I said, "why do you have a form and why does it look like this?" It smiled again. "Because," it said, "you need to see me in the form of an earth plane dimension. The form of the soul is the form of the human body, in any case. The only difference is that the soul is a form without mass. But if you could see the light form of a soul, you would see a head, 2 arms, a body, and 2 legs. The soul is high frequency light without mass. That is the only difference." "Well, why do you seem so masculine to me?" I asked. "I only seem more masculine than feminine because I am powerful. The energy of the soul is powerful, but it is androgynous. That is to say, there is a perfect balance between the positive energy, which is male, and the negative energy, which is female, or yin, feminine, and yang, masculine. The masculine positive energy is thrusting and active. The feminine negative energy is receiving and acceptive. Both are equally necessary to achieve life. One cannot operate without the other." The image of higher self stood calm and centered. I had the impression that it wouldn't assert itself unless I motivated it to do so. I looked out of the window at a tree outside. It was swaying in the breeze. "Listen," I said, "if I asked you to help me stop the movement of a tree, could we do it?" "Try me," said higher self. "Okay," I said. "That tree outside. Let's stop it from swaying." "Very well," said higher self. "Feel my power become your power. Know that together we can accomplish anything." I tuned into this energy of my image of higher self and melded with it. "Now," it said, "ask the tree for permission to control its movement." "Ask the tree for permission?" I asked, suddenly becoming aware of the more refined subtleties of karmic interaction. "Why, certainly," said higher self. "All life must work in harmony, balance, and respect for all other life. There can be no abuse of power without reaping consequence." You will hear the tree respond to you. You will know how it feels about it.
Trees can feel? I asked.
Of course, said Higher Self. All life vibrates with feeling. And the natural state of feeling is love. The state of love is achieved by simply being. Nature is a manifestation of the state of simple beingness. It just is. And that which is, in its purest sense, is perfect balance. Shirley, having then successfully stopped the tree swaying with the help of her higher self, continues. I looked up at higher self in my mind. The arms came down gently. You see? It said. You did that. You can use your energy for anything. But you need to recognize me in order to do it. Then what is the difference between you and God? I asked.
None, it said. I am God, because all energy is plugged into the same source. We are each aspects of that source. We are all part of God. We are all individualized reflections of the God source. God is us and we are God.
And you are me.
Precisely.
Then does everyone have a higher unlimited self of their own?
Exactly, said Higher Self. And each higher self is in touch with every other higher self. All unlimited souls resonate in harmony with each other. The reason you do not recognize that truth on the earth plane is because you are not in touch with the individual soul energy of your higher selves. But you will get there because there is no other place to go to achieve peace. Peace on the outside comes from peace on the inside. Peace on the inside comes from understanding that we are all God.
Dancing in the Light, by Shirley MacLaine, Bantam Books, Incorporated, 1985. Chapter 6, The Learning Planet. Many people living on Earth believe it to be a place of perfection. But Earth is not a place of perfection, it is a planet of accelerated deep learning, a place that is probably the most demanding and testing in the entire scheme of evolution. Acceptance of this fact, reinforced by an understanding of our purpose in being here, can make life much easier and help to ensure that we gain the most evolutionary benefit from Earth's hard lessons. Planet Earth has experienced some of the harshest and the most difficult of lessons, largely as a result of being an isolated, dense physical world long quarantined from the higher dimensions. It has thus provided a prime opportunity for the dark forces to seize control, as they have always sought any chance to take over a weakened subject within our galaxy. Over time, the forces of darkness have thus been able to establish in our area of weakness to negativity an isolating frequency fence. This has made it easier for them to control us, our isolation keeping us unaware of the higher dimensions or more advanced worlds. Only during sleep time have we been able to escape upwards through the veil in our astral body to seek guidance, instruction and spiritual refreshment on the higher planes. On our return next morning to Earth, we usually forget all those nocturnal spiritual plane experiences, although they are still retained within our subconscious memory and can subtly influence our further daily actions. The forgetfulness induced by the veil does force us to focus down here on the many inherent faults within our makeup. Those faults often express themselves as various degrees of aggression, lack of kindness or intolerance towards those we consider either below us or against us. Such inherent faults exist to a certain degree within all evolving humans and traces of them can remain buried even at the highest spiritual levels. At those levels they may not be readily evident, but they can soon emerge at the dense physical 3D level when presented with particularly difficult circumstances. Although the veil interposed between the physical world and the higher planes has made life down here all the more difficult, its existence is nonetheless accepted by us on the higher spiritual levels before incarnating, as part and parcel of our life contract of our learning or teaching mission on Earth. We may even benefit from it, as is further explained by Tender, a spirit guide from the higher spheres. If incarnating spirits on Earth could carry with them even a faint recollection of the joys and beauties of the spiritual sphere, it would make it impossible for them to remain in tenancy of a physical body. To drink deep from the cup of experience, it is necessary to contact life in its lowest form of manifestation. In order to do this, you have to slow down your vibrations to a very slow rate and come under the cumbersome laws which govern that form of matter.
to one who remembered what life really is like on the spiritual plane, the ache to return would be so intolerable that no spirit could hold down an earthly body. It is a merciful provision of God that in such a harsh world memories are temporarily veiled. Full cycle by Ripley Webb, / a link to the full text of this book is available at the end of Book I. Our various philosophies and religions here on earth often provide us with contradictions and complexities. For example, Buddhism and many occult philosophies suggest that our world of individuality, separateness and strife is simply an illusion from which we must free ourselves. But if so, then it is an illusion which must nevertheless appear real to us if we are to learn from it. For example, as we watch a drama unfold on television, we may well try to remain detached, reminding ourselves that it's only a story, but by maintaining such detachment we are likely to gain no benefit from the experience or moral of the story. It's / is / possible to learn by reading stories or observing enactments of the lives of others, but we can only really do this through our full emotional involvement with those events portrayed, entering into the personalities involved and embracing their predicaments, their hopes and their failures. The apparent contradiction between illusion and reality is paralleled by another contradiction often argued here on earth, the nature of good and evil. In the sense that all is learning, all is evolution, there is no / evil / for it is precisely through the experiencing good and bad alternatives that we fully learn to choose the highest wisdom. In this sense there is no /good / or /evil / only /evolution / and the learning, experience and wisdom which it imparts. But to us here on earth, a possible definition of evil would be defined as the path of selfishly motivated interest / of pursuing one's own benefit at the expense or harm of others. This leads to exploitation and conflict in our relationships with one another. This equally applies to our ecological abuse of Mother Earth, and also the plant, animal and mineral kingdoms, which many of us see as existing purely for our personal exploitation and gratification. The path of good could be defined as placing self, not above, nor below others, but as a true equal / respect and treat others just as you would have them treat and respect you in return. And this should apply equally to our treatment of all other created life forms. The worm's life may be unimportant to you, just as your life is incomprehensible to the worm, but the worm's life is very important to the worm, just as yours is to you. From a true recognition of the need to achieve equality with all of created life, we may then develop a ruling behavioral code as /respect for others / of giving unconditional /service to others /. This leads us to giving out /unconditional love /, wherein we give willingly to another without a selfishly motivated thought of getting anything in return. This is always the mark of a higher spiritual being. Good and evil are very real to us here on earth, and must always to a certain extent remain so as a part of our learning process. On the other hand, we must constantly strive to aim at following the universal law of correct conduct. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Earth is a planet of learning, not a planet of perfection. But its imperfections are of our own making, and it is therefore within our power, individually and collectively, to rectify them. The Master's and our goal on this earth is a very special place. You have been given the supreme gifts of the Godhead, divinity, creativity, and free choice. You are, in essence, gods in the making, and this earth is a school for gods. You are highly privileged to incarnate on her, to be a part of the school of earth and to advance your spiritual consciousness through the exercise of those cosmic talents. There are many beings on other planets who are not permitted to achieve consciousness to the same degree. You may now see why Earth is looked upon with envy by the other planets in the solar system, for they do not all possess that high potential. You have, in fact, the potential and the destiny to outstrip every other plane of consciousness within this solar body if only you could but harness your being and direct it with wisdom and love. The Master Zen Tao, channeled through the Ramala Center, Glastonbury. Chapter 7, Death and Review. On the higher spiritual planes, the process of evolution takes place as an unbroken continuity of conscious awareness. At the earth level, however, the difficulties of third-dimensional Earth life, and the physical aging of the dense earthly body, place limitations on the length of time during which we can tolerate the dense physical plane. This requires that we eventually need to physically pass on to spend a relatively longer period on a higher spiritual plane. Here we can review our Earth life's experience and receive much-needed spiritual refreshment before possibly returning to another physical incarnation. Some of us may find that we need to repeatedly learn from and correct the many faults within our makeup, which is possible only at the dense physical third-dimensional level. This cycle is well known as the process of /reincarnation/. The spirit guide tender, Earth is a school, and you learn even when making mistakes. If you face a test and fail, you push yourself to take it again. So if you have lessons to learn in one life which you fail to learn, then in another life you will present yourself with those lessons again, for you cannot progress, and all life is an upward progression, an upward spiral, until you have learned those lessons. You have a test to pass, one which you have set yourself to accomplish. When you pass depends upon the effort you make. If you do not pass the test in one experience, you will have other chances of doing so. You will always find fresh opportunities opening out before you. In time you will accomplish what you set out to do, however many distractions may deter you from your object. The power of the spirit can and will win in the end. It is like a powerful magnet drawing you on. It is the effort that counts. The responsibility is yours. No other can accomplish your mission for you. The scales of divine justice are accurately balanced. There must be nothing owing if you are to progress. Full cycle by Ripley Webb. / A link to the full book text is available at the end of our book I. During our life's review on the spiritual plane following physical death, the next incarnation is planned in advance with the help of one's spiritual guides and masters. With their close consultation, we make a thorough review of our past faults and weaknesses from which we may need to make plans to return to physical life at the third dimensional level. When back in an earthly life, those previously pre-planned events to occur as important lessons can come upon us quite unexpectedly. Some can be quite traumatic experiences, which usually causes the earthly personality to roundly blame the fates or even God for its misfortune. And yet all of these events have been previously planned to manifest at a particular opportune time by the soul itself along with its spiritual guides. When about to undertake an incarnation on Earth, the soul makes a life contract between itself, its higher self and the spiritual hierarchy to live an earth life of an agreed duration in order to correct and learn from those inherent character weaknesses. If the incarnated soul subsequently finds the earth lessons too difficult and decides to terminate life prematurely, such as by suicide, the lessons are thus not only avoided, but are deemed to be postponed until another reincarnation can be arranged. The soul's higher spiritual self will require once again going through the lengthy process of death and rebirth in order to live out those remaining years left within the former life contract. This explains why many of us instinctively have a deep-rooted feeling that suicide is not the best road to go down. For more on the factor of suicide as seen by our angelic guides, see link to the angelic guide's viewpoint on suicide at end of book I/. The Master Zen Tao, the drama of life has a purpose. It is to teach, to evolve our consciousness. Everything that happens on the plane of Earth happens not by chance, but because we have attracted it to ourselves through our behavior in this or in past lives, and have consciously accepted the challenge it represents. It is widely understood that the concept of free will allows us to choose how we will react to given circumstances. It is important to realize, however, that we also exercise free will in our choice of the challenges we agree to undertake during each incarnation. Through free will we choose our challenges and lessons, through free will we choose how we react to them. It is difficult for those who do not accept the concept of reincarnation, of life after life after life, to see how suffering can be regarded as an evolutionary process. But when reincarnation is accepted as an integral part of one's view of evolution, it is easy to understand that we bring into being with each new physical body all that we have created in other Earth lives, and on other levels of existence beyond the physical plane of Earth. We bring with us not only our spiritual wisdom, but also the sins of the past, the lessons we have not learned, the karma we owe both to ourselves and to others. So as we advance through the life which we now lead, we will automatically attract to ourselves the lessons we have chosen to learn, the karma we have chosen to transmute. Thus there is no such thing as a tragedy by chance. Everything that happens on the plane of earth has reason, has purpose. We live in a world in which many people apparently experience great tragedies. Tragedy comes to people either because they chose it for their destiny path or because it will present them with a lesson in life they have yet to learn. Tragedy is the working out of cause and effect. As we experience the effects, so we learn to change the cause. The experience of tragedy also teaches sympathy and compassion, the ability to accept and absorb the minor imperfections in others, that they may in turn do the same for us. If there is one point which I would like to emphasize now, it is this, that suffering is chosen by /yourself/. It is not given to you by your Creator as a punishment. It is chosen by you, willingly, as a lesson to learn, as a lesson which your soul needs at this particular point in its evolution. Since death is such an integral part of evolution and the process of reincarnation, it is important that we develop a deeper understanding of its process, so that we can accept it without fear, and indeed accept it joyfully. There have been many accounts on earth of people who have physically died and who have then miraculously returned to life, even after having undergone certified clinical death. These are known as near-death experiences and many have been documented. Many of the experiences recounted show a remarkable consistency in certain fundamental respects. The sense of passing through a long and bright tunnel with the presence of a great light at the end of it, and the final emergence into that light with strong feelings of spiritual warmth and love. They also report experiencing a remarkable clarity of thought, of seeing a rapid panoramic memory recollection of their entire life. Many of these near-death experiences have been detailed in Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, proving that death is not the eternal blackout which many people assume will follow. A remarkable near-death experience, NDE, through cancer has recently been given to the world by Anita Morgini of Hong Kong : Anita Morgini's near-death experience from cancer. I had cancer, Hodgkin's lymphoma, and on this morning, I could not move. My husband rushed me to hospital, where, after doing scans, they diagnosed me with grade 4B lymphoma, the highest grade. The senior oncologist looked at my report and told my husband that it was too late, and that my organs were now shutting down. I only had 36 hours to live. However, the oncologist said he would do whatever he could but prepared my husband that I would most likely not make it, as my organs were no longer functioning. They started me on a chemotherapy drip as well as oxygen, and then they started to take tests, particularly on my organ functions, so that they could determine what drugs to use. I was drifting in and out of consciousness during this time, and I could feel my spirit actually leaving my body. I saw and heard the conversations between my husband and the doctors taking place outside my room, about 40 feet away down a hallway. I was later able to verify this conversation to my shocked husband. Then I actually crossed over to another dimension, where I was engulfed in a total feeling of love. I also experienced extreme clarity of why I had the cancer, why I had come into this life in the first place, what role everyone in my family played in my life in the grand scheme of things, and generally how life works. The clarity and understanding I obtained in this state is almost indescribable. Words seem to limit the experience. I was at a place where I understood how much more there is than what we are able to conceive in our three-dimensional world. I realized what a gift life was, and that I was surrounded by loving spiritual beings, who were always around me even when I did not know it. The amount of love I felt was overwhelming, and from this perspective, I knew how powerful I am, and saw the amazing possibilities we as humans are capable of achieving during a physical life. I found out that my purpose now would be to live heaven on earth using this new understanding, and also to share this knowledge with other people. However, I had the choice of whether to come back into life, or go towards death. I was made to understand that it was not my time, but I always had the choice, and if I chose death, I would not be experiencing a lot of the gifts that the rest of my life still held in store.